Filmcore.
Hello, guys and ghouls. Welcome to a quarantine edition of the Filmcore podcast. I'm Alex Kirschenbaum, and joining me remotely in New York is Armani Barone. Hello, Armani.
Hi. Glad to be picking up another one of these.
Likewise. And today, the movie of note is House Party, which is celebrating its 30th anniversary this month. It came out on March 9th, 1990, to be specific.
Yeah. It definitely makes you feel, like, nostalgic. But also, like, I don't. It's kind of crazy that this movie is a period piece. And it's, I mean, of course, any movie set in the past is, but it truly is, like, almost the same level as, like, Downton Abbey at this point.
The style is incredible, and it's like everybody has very 1990 haircuts and outfits, and it definitely feels like a bit of a time capsule in that way, for sure.
Yeah, well, for those who haven't seen it, do you want to throw them like a quick review of what House Party is about? Obviously, it's about a house party.
Indeed it is. Late 80s hip-hop stars Kid and Play parlayed their musical success into this movie House Party for New Line Cinema. They portray high school versions of themselves growing up in the suburbs and trying to evade stodgy parents and meddling cops en route to an epic house party at Play's pad, where both intend to show off their rhyming skills and mac on some cuties. Martin Lawrence plays Kid and plays... Martin Lawrence portrays Kid and Play's nerdy DJ friend... Bilal in an early role. The great Robin Harris depicts Kid's single working father, and Tisha Campbell and AJ Johnson shine as Sydney and Shireen, respectively, the objects of all three boys' affections.
Yeah, so definitely they had some, who would later become some pretty, like, you know, big 90s heavy hitters in the film world, especially with Martin Lawrence and Tisha Campbell, later starring in their own sitcom, Martin, which is released 2 years later. So based on what I could tell, this must have been the set that they met on before they embarked on that cinematic journey together.
It cost New Line Cinema $2.5 million. They were then an indie studio getting rich off of cheapy Nightmare on Elm Street and Critters sequels. Since then, they've, of course, been swallowed up by Warner Brothers and are now just sort of a specialty wing of Warner Brothers. But at the time, they were legitimately independent. So they made stuff cheap and fast and for profit. And so this $2.5 million micro-budget movie made $26.4 million at the box office. House Party spawned four sequels, two theatrical and then two direct-to-video. And I guess, apparently, it's going to be remade by LeBron James's production shingle, Spring Hill Entertainment. So...
Oh, wow. I don't think this is a premise that ever needs to be rehashed again, considering there are four other movies that follow it. But, okay. I hadn't seen this movie in so long, and I really appreciate it about it. Overall, it was pretty wholesome, like, compared to kind of, like, current portrayals of high school, like we have with Euphoria, for example, or, like, Superbad or Project X. Like, everything was pretty tame for the most part. And the craziest moment was when a kid gets arrested, but it's... for something that, like, was so, like, not his fault and was he was just being chased by bullies. So at that point, that even seems, like, pretty tame in the line of, like, things you can get arrested for in this kind of genre.
Yeah, he gets chased by bullies and, like, locked into a shed, and then the cops bust up the troublemakers and somehow throw him in jail. But, of course, it's sort of, like, the charges are not going to stick on him, and he makes bail, and that's that.
Wait, well, should we start at, like, the beginning of, like, where this all kicks off?
Yes, sorry, we are getting ahead of ourselves. We don't have to go too in-depth with it, because it's pretty basic of a story, but yeah, we can quickly break down the arc of it.
Well, yeah, well, let's first lay out, like, who we're dealing with. Kid and Play, rap duo. Kid is sort of the nerdier one of the duo. He's known for his really extremely dramatic high-top fade, the one that no one knows how to interact with and that people have to comedically avoid because it's so massive. It's kind of like a Marge Simpson level.
Yeah. They keep calling him Eraserhead because he has the Eraserhead haircut.
Yeah. So he's being raised by a single father who works double shifts. And for some reason, him and everyone in this movie look like they're 30 going to high school. And his dad looks like he's only a few years older than him. And it turns out that Robin Harris was only like 10 years older than him in the movie, playing his dad. Breaking to the whole reason we're having this party is Play's parents are going to be out of town. Enough said.
And then, and so the whole movie's about, you know, the various hijinks that ensue when obstacles are thrown in the way of mostly Kid getting to the party and then getting home from the party.
I mean, there was very little drama at the party, to be honest. I mean, really, the party went off without a hitch, basically. Which is, like, interesting to think, because, like, there's really no conflict in this movie. Well, I mean, there is, but in the grand scheme of things, it's all pretty, like, adorably sitcom level resolved by the end.
Like, there's, like, a big recurring arc at the party of, like, the guy that bumps into Martin Lawrence's DJ setup. And he's just, like, annoyed with, the music choices.
Yeah.
And, like, that's one of the main conflicts at the party.
Just, like, someone bumping the table. So, like, that's low-level stakes here overall.
Right. And then Kid kind of juggles between the Tisha Campbell character and the AJ Johnson character, and Tisha Campbell's annoyed. And that's, I guess, another low-key drama from the party. But that's kind of it. Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like an indie at points, but it also just felt like they were more trying to be sort of true to, like, the actual high school experience versus, like, the super exaggerated forms that we have, like, now. And the only thing that makes it feel, like, inauthentic is the fact that everyone just is so obviously not high school age.
Yeah, like, I didn't know they were supposed to be in high school until we got to the cafeteria scene, and then I realized, oh, okay, I guess we're going to pretend
when
these 30-year-olds are 18.
When those bullies are drinking that milk, I'm like, are they 40?
Yeah.
Like, in this high school?
Just, like, roided out, like, you know, 1990 Stallone level big bully characters. You're like, those guys are not, you know, teenagers.
No.
But, yeah. And so, yeah, I like the sort of innocuous nature of, like, there's a lot of trouble getting to and coming from the party, but there's not really trouble at the party. But it's still, like, engaging enough for you to not lose interest. It's like a 40-minute party scene, but it's not, it has little arcs to it, like narrative arcs, so you're not bored. But it is sort of a gentle hang. It's not, there's not crazy drama like you think of Superbad, where, like, they go to a party and they don't know anybody there, and then they have to, like, try to escape the party, or, like, the guy's girlfriend dances up on Jonah Hill and she, like, has, like, her period on his pants. Stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a memorable scene. But anyway, they don't have that kind of level of drama even in this, which is nice. It's more like Dazed and Confused level, where it's just, like, pretty chill.
Yeah, I mean, in this kind of time and day and age, it's kind of nice to just have a pretty chill movie to coast through.
The part, I mean, like, to be fair, like, there are stakes. Like, the cops, at first it's sort of innocuous. They're sort of pestering Kid and Kid's dad, and the high school bullies that bother Kid and almost prevent him from going to the party. But then things escalate with the cops, and, you know, eventually it leads to Kid's arrest coming home from the party. And so, you know, Kid does go to jail. So, like, that is, you know, that's some stakes. But in the party itself, it's pretty chill.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I feel like a lot of other movies that, like for example, like Boys in the Hood and, like, Friday, that were released during a similar time, where they kind of, like, tackle more of the issues faced by people in the Black community during that period. I mean, and still today, things like, you know, like, poverty and, like, police brutality, they do kind of cover these issues, especially with the fact, like, that the cops keep harassing everyone who's coming and going to the party for almost no reason.
Yeah, just as they're, like, walking around. Yeah.
Yeah. For example, Shireen, she lives in the projects, which in their own way, the kids or kid adults or the teens, as they're supposed to believe, sort of touch on the idea of, like, classism within the community. People don't like to pick her up from her house because she lives in the projects, versus they really celebrate Tisha Campbell's character, Sydney, because her parents are, you know, have money and she lives in, like, a really nice house. I think that's a reality a lot of people face in high school, is when you're sort of aware of your family's own, like, economic standing. But what I also liked about it is that it shows that, like, sort of within the Black experience, there are these different levels, you know, that we don't all like live in the hood, and that we can all sort of be working class and struggling. And also some of us are like, you know, have money or upper middle class and things like that. So
yeah, it was interesting that the two guys, Kid and Play, were thinking about the different situations pragmatically in terms of like hooking up, because their whole thing with like AJ Johnson's character was that she, because she lived in the projects, it, like, no, everyone was going to be home, so they never really would have time alone to hook up. Whereas in like the Tisha Campbell house, there's more room for them to covertly have sex. So that's kind of how they broke it down.
Yeah, which in that respect, I mean, in some ways, like, being in this, like, poor environment meant that Shireen was, like, sort of more looked out for. Well, right off the bat, my favorite scene in the whole movie was the dance-off. That Kid and Play, like, dance routine is pretty iconic. And I really love that moment because it was, I don't know, just so wholesome. And probably my least favorite moment was, like, when Kid gets arrested and goes to, like, jail for an hour. And essentially they make it seem like he's about to be, like, raped in this prison. And I just don't know why this, to me, this joke, I mean, given this film was made in 1990, so it was still pretty low-hanging fruit. Now it's super overplayed. But I guess I don't know, like, from my perspective now, as an adult and having seen, like, a lot of different movies that sort of, like, depict prison life, especially, like, on, like, from a male's perspective, I don't know if this could be triggering for a lot of people, especially if you've been in jail, or if this is, like, if this is not a healthy stereotype to keep, you know, perpetuating. And also the fact that, like, him rapping to elude the other inmates in the cell with him while he waits for his friends to come get him, I don't know. Like, that's the one part that really made me uncomfortable. And I just felt like it, I don't know.
I don't know. This movie is like an honest, it's, you know, it handles things with sort of with good humor and lightheartedly, but it's also, it doesn't shy away from the big issues, affecting like the Black community in that era, or even now, like you said, with like the creepiness of prison and the way that cops prey on certain demographics. So I think, I don't know, I don't think it's, I think it's an uncomfortable scene, but I don't know how, I think it's okay that it's in there and it's brutal and stuff, but it is weird, and it does feel like a little bit, like, it doesn't totally match the tone of the rest of the movie, but I think it's okay. I mean, and then, like, he gets out of it with his, you know, freestyling skills, so that's kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that gives, like, a little bit of levity to the situation and makes it sort of easier to sit through. It's just the fact that he's just, like, sort of, like, freestyling his way out of it. And then it was really touching when he comes out and, like, all of his friends are waiting for him because they've managed to bail him out.
Yeah. Yeah, it was heartwarming. That was a nice shot, too, when he sees the four friends and they have, like, the nice little music cue.
Yeah.
Well handled. Yeah. I think, oh, I should also mention the music was really great. The soundtrack, you know, it's full of, like, late 80s and early 90s R&B and hip-hop, and that stuff's aged super well, like a fine wine. You got Flavor Flav in there. Got some LL Cool J, but, like, retro, sort of peak LL Cool J. Kid and Play do some stuff. Got Heatwave in there today. The theme song is by a zillion people. Full Force, Lisa Leeson, Cold Jam, Ex-Girlfriend, UTFO, Dr. Ice, and Cheryl Pepsi Riley. So, but, yeah, now it feels like, I don't know, it all fits. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I think that was probably the best part of it. I also really love, speaking of the music, I love the hip-hop freestyle battle between Kid and Play. That sort of is sort of the button for the party, the main party sequence. So it's like after the dance-off, they have a rap-off. And that was pretty great, too. So, yeah, I think maybe a bit more of an emphasis on the music would have been fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if we just, like, ended the movie after that party scene, I would have been totally satisfied.
Yeah, you know, I think that's definitely valid. Because, like, the stuff with the bullies escalates weirdly, and the bullies are going to, like, burn down the house and ostensibly murder everybody inside at one point.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of extreme. I don't know, it's like watching It or something, and then the bullies are going to murder the out-of-shape kid, right? And, like, I just, you know, you just think, man, like, they're really taking it to another level. I don't know, maybe, like, that stuff happens. Like, maybe in the 50s, in It, those kids would murder each other if given the time. And maybe in the context of this movie, like, maybe those kids would have burned the house down. I just don't totally buy either scenario. I don't know.
So, yeah, I feel like they sort of couldn't get in. That was, like, the end of it. It should have been the end of it. And, like, we could have all walked away with, like, kid walking them home, walking each of the girls home. Then getting back to his house, feeling like he accomplished something, and then still getting trouble in the end by his dad. Which also was weird. Like, I'm saying his dad was going to spank him. He's, like, 30 years old. I don't know.
Yeah. That was another thing, too, but I guess that's maybe from the era. Like, I don't know. I was never spanked as a kid. Like, but I'm sure it was more prevalent back in the day, so.
It's just hard. I just think it's weird. Like, I don't know who's spanking teens at this point, but their age difference makes it hard to believe the spank was even going to happen.
That's true. But we're supposed to suspend disbelief and expect that we're supposed to assume the dad is like 10 years older than the actor was. And then the kid is like 10 years younger than he actually was. And that makes the age gap more understandable. But yeah, in the movie, like, you can tell that they're kind of close at age.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, kid would have been like 25 when they shot it, something like that, because he was born in 64 and it was probably shot in 89 if it came out in March of 1990. So yeah, and then the dad would have been he was born in 53, so he would have been like 36 when they shot it. So yeah, I don't know, you know, 11 year age gap, weird.
Yeah.
Let's see, other important points to hit on here. Let's see, I don't know, I think, oh, George Clinton was pretty good in it. I wanted more George Clinton too. Speaking of the music, just like get a George Clinton number in there, you know? Maybe make the hang scene, the party scene itself, like even 10 minutes longer. And then yeah, shave out the prison stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see. So yeah, what overall did you think of it, like, you know, watching it as an adult? Did you like it? What is your star rating out of 4 stars? In a 4-star system, I would give it 3, including half stars.
So out of 4 stars, my rating probably be 2.5 out of 4. Like, I don't know, for nostalgia reasons, I loved it. Just for the sake of, like, it is sort of like a time capsule. And I really loved everyone's style in this. I mean, overall, I thought it was, like, pretty cute. But maybe, like, 20 minutes too long. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this definitely is, like, if you haven't seen this movie since you were a kid, it's definitely worth a rewatch, you know, maybe every 30 years. So, yeah.
That's it, though. Just every 30 years. Okay.
Yeah.
I liked it, I think, a little more than that. I didn't, I've never seen it before today, so it was cool to experience as an adult coming to it for the first time. I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's been around, and I've been aware of it, but haven't made the time for it until now, so... But yeah, I think it was pretty fun. Despite the creepy prison scene, it was still fairly light most of the time. And yeah, what were you gonna say? Sorry.
Oh no, that's it. That's it.
Oh, great! That was a succinct episode of the Film Core podcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everybody, you know, stock up out there. Be safe. Get that disinfectant ready. And, you know, get your Purell handy. And, yeah.
Yeah, so thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Yep, which will probably be soon because we have oodles of time.
Yeah, we have time.